Hello, Susana Lopez here, actor turned barrister turned broadcaster turned true crime writer and proud member of Sisters in Crime Australia. Welcome to the Scarlet Stiletto Bites podcast. For over 30 years now, Sisters in Crime Australia has supported our women crime writers, both true crime and fiction, and some criminal literary talent has been unearthed. Among many awards, there's an annual prize for short crime fiction, the Scarlet Stiletto Awards. And for those of you who prefer your stories by ear, in 2023 we commenced this podcast series, Scarlet Stiletto Bites, to celebrate the sisters' 30th anniversary. Each story is short, but not always sweet. Expect twisted tales, quirky humour, and a frisson of feminism. Please support us by following, sharing, reviewing, and generally spreading the word. We have no paywall. Women's instincts. Something of an old-fashioned concept, perhaps even frowned on by the super woke. And yes, suspicions may simply come from febrile imaginations. Which is it in today's story? Nursing a Suspicion by Robin McWilliam. Scarlet Stiletto's Best Investigative Story Award 2012. Frank watches our comings and goings. From his place he can see down the long driveway to my house. Our strange neighbour lives on the road into town. The outskirts of a large country town, famed for its gold rush days, is a good place to meld in. One day, after dropping my two girls at primary school, I stopped the car outside his place for a friendly word. Frank rises from the worn armchair on the veranda. Cow manure crumbles from his work boots as they scrape across timber boards. His jeans are so stained, they've lost all resemblance to denim. The gut precedes him down the path to the wire gate. It creaks under his weight as he leans on it. He has a mole on the side of his nose and a glint in his eyes. Not many women stop for a chat. I weaken occasionally. The old bastard must be lonely living there on his own, I think. He can't be more than 50, but he rarely makes it into town. How's it going, Frank? Oh, not bad. Cow got stuck in a dam, but I got her out. His eyes straighten my cleavage. Your husband didn't leave at his usual time. I straighten in my seat, feeling uncomfortable under his gaze. No, Barry's off fishing again. Lots to do before I head to the hospital. See you, Frank. That's how I know he's watching us. My shift in emergency passes in the usual blur. Ambos coming in, car accident, blood and trauma, pee platers again, I'm told. Young blokes don't look so good after being pulled from twisted metal. Well, at least these two will survive. Then there's the other end of the spectrum. Oldies with failing tickers or falls to hasten the end of their days. It's dusk by the time I'm home and the family is complete inside. At the clothesline, I notice a few gaps. My underwear is missing. Well, it's not the first time items have disappeared. In the family room, Barry is ensconced in his chair with the paper. The girls are doing their homework, busy with books and pencils at the table. Did anyone take my underpants off the line? I ask. Three sets of eyes look up. Barry's brow raises, a smirk hovers on his face, as if, look, probably that kook down the road, I mutter. You're imagining things, Barry says. I'm not imagining the holes on the washing line, Barry. I hang out the clothes. Mum, Samantha breaks in, why would a man want your undies? Good question, darling. Now, go on with your homework. I'm telling you, Barry, he's a sicko. I don't feel secure with you going off on all these fishing trips all the time. Ah, you're exaggerating, woman. He's a harmless old bugger. That night, I can't get to sleep. Just as I'm drifting off, Barry snuffles and my mind roils with suspicion. Stealing knickers is not the sign of a healthy mind. And why would Frank watch our every move if not to enter our domain? People tolerate the odd nutter in a community, but some turn out to be extremely dangerous. Years earlier, a nursing colleague had been murdered. The killer was never caught. The cops surmised it was someone passing through, not a local. But what if it was someone we all knew? 2 years ago, a nurse coming home from night shift was run off the road. She survived the accident, but claims it was deliberate. There was some mention of a dark Range Rover. Guess what Frank drives? If only the detectives had investigated the incident properly. I turn over and try deep breathing, pulling the covers up so I'm cozy and warm. Nothing helps. My mind is charging off in another direction. I remember at that time suggesting a link. Someone is targeting nurses. We all worked at the same hospital. Perhaps he'd been treated badly and blamed nurses for all the ills in his life. Overreacting, I was informed. Well, stolen undies sure unsettle my thoughts. A week later, the girl's underwear, tiny and pink, disappears. Sometimes I drive back home at odd hours to try and catch the pervert on my property. Then I'll see who this sicko is. Barry is away again, indulging his obsession with rods and lures. It'd be okay if he brought home some decent fish to eat and help the budget. But he's a tag and release man, so all I'll see is a photo of his latest beauty. His smile's as wide as the fish's gaping gullet. I've dropped the girls at school, then they're going to my mother's for the night, so, well, because I'm on a late shift. The bathroom is scrubbed and shiny, the ironing is up to date. I think perhaps I'll read for a bit before getting ready to go to the hospital. Our waterbed is a favourite place for losing me in a book. I feel the coolness of the bedroom, a respite from afternoon sun. Flinging aside the doona, I realise that the sheets have been disturbed. Protruding from underneath the mattress are bits of rope and duct tape. My blood almost stops pumping. I barely breathe. Questions thump my brain. Is someone in the house? Do they know Barry isn't home? This preparation is for me. I envision getting home from work in the wee hours. Was the monster planning to tie me to the bed? Oh, shudder at the thought of rape, or worse. Adrenaline surges into my legs. Frantic, I run from room to room, searching the house. This is serious. I'm not meant to discover his lethal preparations in the light of day. No one is here. Yet. I check all the doors and windows are locked, then phone the police. The two detectives, when they finally arrive, slouch in the doorway. One, solidly built in a charcoal suit, takes charge. Any sign of break and enter, ma'am? No, I may have left the back door unlocked. People who live out of town often do, I think. Not wise, considering what you've reported. His tone is a rebuke. I lead the way into the main bedroom. Well, I wasn't exactly expecting a sicko like this in my house. Big boy doesn't bother answering. They spend a few minutes examining the rope and duct tape adorning my mattress. Think we need to bring in forensics, Sarge? The younger one asks. Nah. No forced entry, nothing's really happened. Get a photo of that stuff and bag it. As the offsider goes out to the car, I feel my teeth clench. They're not taking this seriously. That's why they didn't catch the nurse's murderer. I see little point in a dedication to the job lecture. Instead, I start on the missing underwear story. Big Boy's expression shows mild interest. He jots a couple of lines in his notebook before looking up at me. Ma'am, you say your husband is often away fishing? He hesitates. Sometimes we see this sort of thing, people having affairs. The D is watching my face. Well, detective, this isn't about an affair. I'm the potential victim here, I say, and flinch when the camera flashes. The younger one snaps on gloves. Tape is torn from the bed frame, and the evidence disappears into a brown paper bag. It's sealed and signed. Threat dealt with. He leaves my bed, scrunched up. My interrogator continues. You don't seem particularly upset. Detective, I'm an emergency nurse. Only a woman blubbering would get his attention. Oh, he says, raising his hands as if in surrender. That does it. I launch my theory. If you check your records, you'll find a nurse was murdered 2 years ago and the killer hasn't been caught. Another colleague of mine was run off the road and now I'm being targeted. This bloke wouldn't be on the loose if you did your job. Big Boy's face looks like he's sucked lemons. Then, ma'am, I guess you'd better come into the station and give a statement. He motions to his offsider and they stride out of the bedroom. As their white Commodore leaves in a whirl of dust, I think of Frank. Is he enjoying watching the detectives roar back into town? I put on my uniform, lock up the house and follow. Frank's veranda is empty. I park outside the ochre-colour building of the cop shop. On entering, I see Big Boy talking to a policeman I know. A glance tells me I'm the topic of discussion. My friend waves. As the detective approaches, I notice his demeanour changes from suspicious to respectful. No doubt he's been filled in. I save folk in this town. I deal with trauma just as the cops do. Perhaps Big Boy is tired of meeting people on the worst day of their lives. It takes half an hour to do the statement, then I head to the hospital. Following my shift, I don't go home alone. I drive to my mum's. A cuppa with her makes things feel normal again. The girls are asleep, so I bed down on the couch. Comfy cushions envelop me as they did in my teen years. We leave early the next morning to be ready for school. The girls chatter in the back seat as we pass Frank's house. He's not out the front. Is it you harassing us, I think? I feel unease rise like bile as I rumble down our drive. My home used to be a sanctuary. Now I wonder if someone is waiting inside. Will my daughters be molested? Will I be attacked? It's like grit has made its way into my brain. The torment of uncertainty is now my constant companion. Fingers shaking, I unlock the backsliding door and begin my search. Nothing seems changed, and I wish Barry were home. His favourite fishing spot is 7 hours' drive away. By the time I talked to him yesterday, it was too late to leave. He should be home early afternoon. On my way back from dropping the girls at school, I see Frank. He waves. I don't respond. The bastard is standing there like a sentinel. I stare ahead at the road, feeling my stomach solidify to stone. Has my being friendly caused his unwelcome intrusion? Stop! Stop! For God's sake, don't think like a victim. I park outside the shed that also acts as our garage. I look at the house with fresh eyes. It's elongated, all on one level, surrounded by a bullnose veranda. Every room has sliding doors with flimsy screens. Even locked, they're easy to jemmy open. When Barry and I built the house, the doors were designed to let in any breeze during scorching summers. And now I realise it's not too secure. Unlocking the back door, I complete my customary search of each room. In my walk-in robe, I finish at my underwear drawer. My everyday knickers are white or black cotton with a V of lace and a tiny bow. I make a mental note to buy old lady bloomers to see if the pervert pinches them off the line. When I met Barry at university, my underwear used to be a touch more risque. He had a body to die for, not to mention his wicked grin. He'd done a year of engineering when our raunchy romps in his Holden turned his thoughts to marriage. Impatient to earn money, he took a job at the sawmill. I remember finishing nursing and soon after starting at the hospital. Our big day came and went. Coupledom filled our lives. And then the treasures arrived. My fingers stray to the back of the drawer. I find the black lace undies I wear for special occasions and hold them up. Something is not right about the shape. Ah, I see the crotch has been cut out. Instantly they fall from my hand. When did this happen? Last night I wasn't home. I know the door was locked. Does the sicko have a key? Oh, I'm not having those detectives here again. Big boy's smirk was enough last time. But envisaging strange hands touching my underwear chills me. The pervert is getting off on this sexual stuff. Fingers extended, I take the knickers into the kitchen and place them in a plastic clip-lock bag. I hide it behind platters in the pantry. Bugger waiting for Barry to come home. I ring a company that installs alarms. That'll tell me if someone gets in. I'll also feel safer coming into the house. No one can be waiting inside. This is a perfect solution. Only 2 days to wait for a quote. I walk into every room and check the doors are locked before tidying up the kitchen. Toast crumbs, confetti, the bench tops. The dishwasher hums. My arguments for Barry in favour of the alarm system mount in my mind. He doesn't come in late from shift work like I do. He never hears his mobile over the whine of saws at the mill. And a pervert is not messing with his underwear. After lunch, I take the washing out to the line. The grass is already browning for lack of rain. It's quite windy as I peg the clothes, deliberately not leaving a space. I think of my statement filed away at the cop shop. Bet those slack country D's are doing nothing. Perhaps I should start a little investigating myself. Take a photo of the clothesline, setting the time and date to show on the print. Then take another following a raid. Before I hunt out the camera, I walk slowly around the house. The cement is mud-stained and won't tell me much. Occasionally I take a broom to it or hose it down. There's an old sofa facing the view over the dam and a few straggly pot plants. I examine the grass at the edge. In a bit of dirt, there's a partial boot print. When Barry arrives home, I'll compare the patterns. Shoe matches put crimps at the scene and do catch a few. I also find a few scratches on a door jamb. More for my own satisfaction, I take a number of photos. Then I drive into town to do the food shopping. I can't pass Frank's without checking for a sign of him. Now we're both watching each other. No sighting this time. I sigh and turn up the radio. With the week's food stashed in the station wagon, I think of my undies dilemma. I walk back to Big W and trail up the rows of knickers. I find gross ones, flesh-coloured, decidedly unsexy. Not much of a trophy. I select 4 pairs and can't imagine myself wearing them. I'll probably rig up a line in the bathroom for the girls and mine and hang the new baggies outside. The girl at the checkout is scanning items as slowly as possible. Dressed in black, short and shaggy hair to match. I wonder if she's a goth. dark eyeliner adds to her ghostly appearance. The customer before me fidgets with her credit card and flashes a raised eyebrow in my direction. Silent communication for how do these young things get a job? I glance at my watch. School's out. The girls will be waiting for me. The damn underwear is clammy in my hand. Finally, a vacant look from checkout girl. The machine beeps and I pay. Bag fluttering, I run to the car. 20 minutes late and the playground is almost empty. The girls are not in their usual spot. I scamper after a teacher about to disappear inside. Miss Masters, have you seen my girls? I'm almost out of breath. She seems surprised to see me. Mrs. Fletcher, you're here. Finally, delayed at the shops. Oh, she says and looks across the play area. Your neighbour, Frank, was here. Told me you were called to the hospital, a bus accident on the highway. Said he'd give your daughters a lift home. Frank? My raised voice alarms her. Frank's got my girls? Well, there's nothing wrong, is there? I don't wait to answer, but race to my vehicle. Please God, let them be safe. The bitumen flies beneath my wheels on the frantic trip home. My emergency calm is teetering. It's different when your own are at risk. How will I ever forgive myself if Frank molests my daughters? I'll kill the bastard if he's touched them. I roar past his place. No Range Rover at the front. The car bucks and squeals as I take our driveway too fast, and then I see a cluster of vehicles. Barry's home, and Frank is there as well. Reefing open the back door, I race to the girls' bedroom. Samantha's school uniform is on the bed. She's changing into a sun frock. Lily is on the floor, colouring in. I pull them both into my arms and slump on the bed. Tears flood my face. Blood pulses in my temples as I hold the girls tight. Samantha pulls away. What's wrong, Mummy? I was afraid something had happened to you. I wasn't called to the hospital, just held up at the shops. Lily frees herself. Oh, we're fine. Uncle Frank gave us a lift. Uncle Frank? Since when, I think. Dad got home just as we did. Lily adds. You two stay in your room. I'm going to see Dad. As I stride down the hall, I hear voices. The two men are on the sofa out the front. Frank's just finishing off a crownie. What's up? You look like a train wreck, Barry says. Or a bus smash. I see Barry's confused, but I have Frank's attention. He feigns a smile. Just a story for the teacher. No harm giving the girls a lift home. Frank heaves himself up. What's this about, Marie? Barry puts down his beer and stands. Stabbing the air in front of Frank's chest, I continue. He lied. Took our daughters from school. God knows what would have happened if you hadn't got home. Frank edges away from me. I don't want no trouble. His expression innocent. Thanks for the beer, Baz. Our neighbour slinks off round the corner and his Range Rover leaves spirals of dust. Barry sits down and pats the sofa for me to join him. You better tell me what's been going on. Not like you to get upset. His arm encircles my shoulder. I tell him everything. His mouth tightens when I mention the detective's accusation. I finish with the alarm. That'll cost, he says. You didn't see the ropes and duct tape, Barry. It's not negotiable. He's so used to me coping, he thinks I'm over-dramatising the situation. Fair enough. I want you to feel safe. Barry slips off his work boots and goes for a shower. I take one round the back to the imprint in the dirt. No match. And my husband has no others at the moment. The intruder has left his mark. That night I sensed Barry's hand creeping to my side of the bed, his foreplay signal. I respond and take the initiative. He murmurs. Soon, Barry's snoring. I sneak out of bed, put on a gown and drop my camera in the pocket. Using the torch, I take a midnight stroll. A cow moves across the paddock. Wings of an owl sweep overhead as my pool of light moves on. There's no moon. Soothed by darkness and cool night air, I'm soon at my destination. Switching off the torch, I lift Frank's gate to prevent it squeaking. I tiptoe onto the veranda, snatch a boot he's left by the door. Hidden behind a shrub, I photograph its sole and return it. Back at my house, I compare the tread of Frank's boot to my previous photo. Well, looks like a match to me. The imprint is nowhere near where Frank had walked earlier. Maybe now I've got evidence of his snooping. Barry's breathing is steady when I slide back into bed. Next day at the hospital, I check past records. 3 years ago, Frank had been in emergency, passed a kidney stone, the male equivalent of childbirth, they say. The notes mention waterworks trouble, enlarged prostate, had to have a rebore. Excruciating pain kept him in for a week, pissing blood. Maybe he'd been unhappy with his care. Perhaps he'd become impotent as a result of the operation. Is a twisted mind possible motivation for harming medical staff? A white van pulls up and two blokes in blue overalls come to the door. I welcome them in, firing questions about alarm systems. Then I say I want one, pronto. Get nervous with my husband away on fishing trips. I need my sleep. He goes to his vehicle, returning with a large plastic case. We talk sensors, battery backup, and he suggests the panic button beside my bed. If you hear someone trying to get in, you set the alarm off. Scares most people shitless. He demonstrates the screamer and my eardrums nearly burst. They check out every room and take measurements. All up, the system's nearly $2,000, and they agree to start installing tomorrow. Barry's doing the school pickup, so I don't have to worry about the girls. I get ready for my shift. Applying my lipstick in the bathroom, I see my underwear and the girls strung above the bath. It's time to have my house under infrared surveillance. Once the alarm's working, the pervert won't be coming into my home. When it goes off, the security company sends a car straight away. No more knicker tampering for Frank. That mongrel isn't in sight when I drive past. Bet he doesn't know I'm onto him. I phone Barry to update him on the alarm. He starts, Marie, you're really paranoid about this. No, Barry, I'm trying to keep a bloody sicko out of our home, and you're often not there. Silence. Does he feel an ounce of guilt? Men are supposed to protect their families, but sport comes first with Aussies. Damn his fishing. Well, I suppose you need the alarm, but $2,000's a lot. I do, Barry, and no more fishing for you until it's working. I hear his sigh of defeat. Then go for it. See you tonight. Male priorities. After work, I make a few notes, but my case against Frank is too flimsy. I decide to contact the nurse who survived the accident and discover she still works here. We meet for coffee in the cafeteria. Narelle walks in, her black hair drawn into a tight bun. She seems wary and her face is etched with worry lines. We talk about her experience and I can see she's still haunted by the whole business. To relieve the tension, I tell her my scenario. Surprise, surprise, her underwear went missing. When I describe Frank and reveal my suspicions, Narelle's face whitens to match her uniform. I remember him, she says. A real sleaze. I was working the night before his operation when he called me in and said, give this a tug. He had an erection like a tent pole. Ugh, how repulsive. He's more than a dirty old man, I figure. I play with my cappuccino. Narelle appears lost in thought, then adds, well, I had my suspicions too. Looked into the details of the murdered nurse. She had a fiancé. I went to see him. Her engagement ring was never found. She describes the ring in detail. A square cut solitaire with tiny diamonds around the band. How did she die? Repeatedly raped and tortured. Her body was dumped at an old mine site. I noticed Narelle's hands quivering. Thanking her, I weave around tables out in the afternoon sunshine. On the drive to the shops, I wonder where the missing ring is. The story's more tragic, knowing both their lives were ruined. And what if Frank took the ring? That'd give detectives something to work with. Once parked, I open a bottle of cola. Its fizzy bubbles relieve my thirst. How does the sex drive in some men become skewed, turning them into a predator? I'm mulling over what a twisted bastard Frank is when I see his Range Rover nearby. I take a metal nail file from my handbag and sluice cola over Frank's tyre, then slice the rubber. Shishing air escaping delights me. I check for passers-by and stab a second one. Frank will take a while dealing with two flat tyres. I never thought that cola trick worked. I almost skipped back to my car. Snapping on surgical gloves, I find Frank's back door is unlocked. It creeps open. Dirty dishes are piled in the sink. A greasy pan is on the stovetop. It's dingy in the bedroom and smells of body odour. I begin rifling through the untidy contents of his drawers. And guess what the bottom one is full of? Women's underwear. Some mine. Frank's been pinching this stuff, no doubt. At the back is a tan cigarette box. Before I open it, I glance around the room and I listen. This place is giving me the creeps. With shaking hands, I flip open the lid. A diamond glints in the dim light. It's exactly as Narelle described it. Tears fill my eyes as I think of its owner. That Frank is the epitome of evil. I take photos with my phone, then I place everything back and get the hell out of there. Days later, we're used to pushing the alarm button whenever we leave the house. As I drive past, he's digging in the front garden, a confident wave just to confuse him. I could let the cops know about the ring, but that wouldn't prove Frank is my persecutor. Sheer doggedness makes me think. How to trick Frank into revealing himself. At the hospital, we are soon slammed. Shrill sirens announce several ambulances. Doors open, trolleys squeak. A semi-trailer overtaking a small sedan overturned. The woman driver of the smaller vehicle careered into the wheels of the larger one, and Ambo yells, pointing at his patient. The team work on her first. Chest injuries, deflated lung, and possible internal bleeding. Within minutes, she's off to surgery. The truckie is not seriously hurt. A few stitches, check him over, and he'll be back on the road. I feel like giving him a lecture. Why the stupid risk-taking? I should get this bloke back to watch that poor woman recover. Always pushing it, travelling at high speed. How come truckies don't realise it takes a lot to stop those huge rigs? I take a deep breath and focus on patching up the dope instead. I arrive home after 11 p.m. Slip in and turn off my trusty alarm. Barry's hit the rods again and the girls are at my mother's. Grabbing a cup of tea, I head into the study. I download my phone pictures onto the computer. Then I key in all my notes regarding Frank's activities. I whack in the relevant photos, underwear, boot prints, and a ring, just like a police brief. Not bad for a rookie detective, but will it be enough to impress Big Boy? The hallway floorboards creak as I make my way to bed. A reminder I'm alone, and a murderer is just up the road. I set the alarm, lock my bedroom door, and settle into bed. Darkness envelops the house. Is Frank watching? The image of the rope and duct tape on my bed makes me shiver. I'm strong from handling patients, but Frank looks like a powerful brute. Should I get a kitchen knife? What if he does get inside? Hopefully those movement sensors will watch if I ever fall asleep. Damn Barry. In the morning, I wake from a dream about Dad. He was performing his rabbit trap trick. When we were kids and he'd had a few beers, he'd set the trap, then slam his hand down hard on the plate. The jagged jaws would close, barely leaving dents on his skin. Dad laughed every time. Anyone else want to go? Since his death 5 years ago, I've missed him as my protector. But the dream reminds me of souvenirs I'd taken from the shed on his property. I dress and go out to our garage. It's already warm in the sunshine and a magpie is caroling on a nearby fence post. At the back, amongst the tools, lie Dad's two dingo traps. Rust and dust won't make them less effective. Rabbit traps are tiny, but these are big enough to snavel a man's ankle. Thanks, Dad. It's another 2 weeks before all the family are away for the night. I'll be setting off for my shift soon, but I've got a bit of digging to do. Just off the edge of the veranda, in the two spots I've seen Frank's boot prints, I bury and set the dingo traps. With the heel of my riding boots and a crowbar, it takes some pressure to force the jaws open. Then I trickle dirt over each plate to conceal them. I bang in the restraining posts and cover them with buckets. Every day I've seen Frank, I've either waved or stopped for a chat. He must be wondering why I'm so friendly all of a sudden. If he's vigilant, he'll know I'm alone. And by the time I get to bed, it's after midnight. Sleep comes easily now with my infrared security. Sometime in the night, I wake to howls of pain. Animal or human? I grab the torch and turn off the alarm. From the back room, I see a figure slumped on the ground. Gotcha! I yell and dial 000. The light illuminates Frank's distorted face, the mole on his nose. My feet in the wet grass, I stand over him. I play the torchlight over his trapped leg. Ragged jaws, slicked with blood, have bitten to the bone. I shine the beam directly into his face. I know what you did, Frank. The end. Thanks so much for listening. We'd love to get your feedback and we'd love to reach more listeners. Our website is sistersincrime.org.au and our email address is admin@sistersincrime.org.au. Until next Friday then, when we bring you another scintillating story from Australian women crime creators.